Hi, I'm Michael R. Jackson.
Hello, everyone. I am Dominique Mariso.
Hi, I'm Marshawn Davis.
Hi, I'm Jordan E. Cooper, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. We made it to 2020. It is our first episode of the new year, y'all. The new decade, even. And some of y'all may know, but I like to choose a word at the beginning of every year to guide my year, to inspire my resolutions and goals, and to keep me on a path to experience the most growth for that year. So before, I've had action, I've had discovery, I've had fearless, and this year I have wonder, because I just want to lean into my curiosity and I want to stay excited about all that New York City has to offer. And it's like Goldstar knew this, because all of my recommendations this week were about exploring New York City. You've got the Museum of New York City, you've got Central Park private tours, Brooklyn Bridge Park bicycle rides, all of this and so much more. But as y'all know, that is just the beginning with Goldstar. They offer affordable ticket options to theater, concerts, comedy shows, and so much more. So download Goldstar and let's make some memories, y'all. And I know, like, I'm fully aware that every week I'm like, I'm so hype, I'm so excited, I'm so thrilled. And then I comment on how I know I comment on that. But I have to preface that because, y'all, this week is another level. I know I've said that before too, but I'm trying to say, like, this guest is someone who I did not know a year ago, and is someone who, not to like stress you out, put pressure on you, but like has actually changed my life and has changed the way, has set a new bar for how I view theater, what theater I like. This play, along with Schoolgirls, I feel like are the two shows that I'm like, if the show I am watching now does not match those two, then I actually don't really like it. Like, they have set the new standard. Anyways, enough about my gushing, because don't worry, there will be more. He is a playwright. He is a performer. He is a producer. He's a director. We love ourselves a multi-hyphenate. The genius behind Ain't No Mo at the Public Theater, which y'all have heard me gush about before, is Jordan E. Cooper.
Hey.
Hi. What kind of extra intro did I just do?
That was a Felicia intro.
It, you know what? It really was.
Yes. And I appreciate every word of it. Oh, I really, really do.
I mean, I'm happy to hear that, only because I know it's hard to like take in praise, because you're like, you know what? I just need to be doing the work. But like, I also want you to know the impact that your work has.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Because I'm definitely like a keep going, keep going, keep going.
Like
I was just
Capricorn.
Talking to somebody about that the other day, about, you know, sitting in your moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Sitting in your moments is so real. And I mean, I think, yeah, like, obviously, of course, it's good to be focused, but just knowing that you resonate with people, because that's like, you're connecting with people through your words, and like, that's really special.
Thank you.
But you've always been good at receiving, like, I remember the first time we met at Ain't No Mo, Jermichael introduced us, and I was just like, and I didn't know what to say to you, because I was like so overwhelmed, and you were just like, hey, it's lovely to meet you. And I was like, oh my God, he's amazing. But now I've calmed down. Well, I've not calmed down a little bit, but I've become more articulate, I feel like, in expressing my feelings.
I feel that.
Buckle up for the next 30
minutes.
Yes,
I'm ready. I'm ready. Clink, clink.
So yeah, so y'all, obviously we went through Ain't No Mo because I was a fangirl. But I also found out you were from Texas.
Yes.
Which we love a Texas kid, obviously.
Yes.
And so I want to know, how did you get involved in performing arts in Texas?
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah. So I was raised a very, you know, very Christian, very Baptist, very sports oriented family.
Okay.
Nobody was really into performing arts or anything artistic. It was all sports.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes my behind.
Like, hey, what's up?
Right. And I would like write these stories and like do these things in the living room without really knowing what it was, you know what I mean? And I would like put on plays in my living room and then put on plays in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would write plays. And the only outlet we had really was church. So my mom went to my pastor and was like, hey, do you mind if he puts on his plays at the church? And my pastor let me put on plays after church on Sundays.
Oh my God.
And like it was really, really cool. The audiences got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then the plays got raunchier and raunchier. Hey. And literally, R. Kelly's Bump and Grind was playing in the sanctuary during one of those. No lie. I don't see nothing wrong. Okay, let me stop singing because I don't want him to get no money. Yeah, so that was the thing. And then I started like mowing lawns to like rent out theaters downtown so I could put on my plays. And I like I remember I got my first credit card when I was debit card. I was probably like 13, 14.
Wow.
And I like maxed it out so I could like, I had to save all my birthday money, all my Christmas money, all those lawnmower money and just like rent it out of the theater. And I put on a one-man show, which was called Masked. But I actually wasn't in the one-man show. You know who's in the one-man show?
Who?
Major Attaway, who is the genie in Aladdin. And we used to rehearse in my living room.
Okay, I need to just take a pause. Like, this podcast might as well be sponsored by Texas, or like Broadway might as well be sponsored by Texas, because there's so many talented kids who come from the DFW, Texas area.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy, yeah.
That is bananas.
Yeah, so I wrote that for him, and then a local theater, Jubilee Theater in downtown Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
I was selling concessions there.
Okay.
I would just do that so I could see the show over and over and over again. So I literally wanted that funny story, which we're going to come back around, I ain't know how. But I used to sell concessions there, see the shows like every night.
Mm-hmm.
And the artistic director, who's the artistic director of the theater at the time, came and saw my play that I was doing downtown that Major was starring in. And he decided to make me their artist in residence at the theater. And so I started ADing all their shows, and then I starred in a couple of them. And then at the end of the season, I wrote Black Boy Fly, which was a play that was based off of a Kendrick Lamar song.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like sold out every night, and the money from that show got me through my first year of college in New York.
That's amazing. What I loved what you just said, because every moment of like transition for that, you never questioned it sounds like.
You just knew. I just kept going. I just always knew that I wanted to do the work. And like I really didn't care where it was being done. I just wanted people to see it, you know what I mean? Because there was always a story to tell. And so like I always told people like I'm never like sit and wait for somebody to get their eyes on it. Never do the work so this person can see it and then give you money and then do this. No, just do it. Find a way to do it yourself and just do the work. At the end of the day, if nobody sees it, at least that one person who's in the audience was hopefully touched by it. You know what I mean? So like that was always the drive. And like I there was something always too about like just being young and being underestimated a lot. Like even in the sense like LD Bell High School, which we were talking about earlier before we started, which was my high school in Hearst, Texas. I remember being so excited when I left junior high because I started the drama club in junior high because they didn't have one. And so when I got to high school, I was like, oh, there's a drama class. Like, like I'm going to like not have to do as much. You know what I mean? I was going to just enjoy it. And when I got there, I remember I auditioned. It was me and this other girl, and we were the only two black students in the whole theater department. And we were so excited to audition for the fall play. And our teacher at the time, I remember we auditioned, and she pulled both of us aside. She pulled her aside first, and she was like, you know, Serafina, you're so good. You're so good. You're so beautiful. But I just can't give you this role because you would have to be romantic with a white boy on stage, and it would look like peanut butter and tuna on stage together.
Peanut butter and tuna.
And then she pulled me aside. She said, Jordan, oh my God, Jordan. Oh my God. Like, you're so good. You're so great on stage. But I just don't think there's a part in this play for you. I just don't see it. And so me and her ended up being cast as shadows in the play, where we were dressed in all black morph suits and we brought stuff on and off the stage.
This cannot be a real story. Are you for real?
Yes. But I remember being so mad. I remember being so mad that I wrote a play where the lead characters were an interracial couple for Serafina and and another boy, the boy who she considered to be too beautiful, you know, to be next to her. And I wrote a play with them two, started as a married couple, been married for like 24 something years. And I wrote that play, and I like charged $2 tickets and made her $600 off of $2 tickets in one weekend. And she shut her mouth.
How old were you when this happened?
I was
15? I'm sorry. Broadway producers could learn a thing from you. But like, so, and I'm, we'll get into it more with Anomo as well, but like, I just feel like you have such a mind, an ear, like whatever, a spirit, I don't know what you want to call it, but like, you're able to just like tap into people's essence, which you like sounds simple because like as a playwright that's what you should do, but like there's a certain truth that you're able to like laser in on, and I'm like, I don't know if you can distill that into something, but like, when have you always been like that? I mean, because you have, you were 15 years old doing that.
I think it's, you know, I think a lot of it just came from listening. It just came from like just being fascinated with people and being around people. Like even that, like you saw me writing at the Signature, like I just love writing around people,
right?
And I think, like, even when I was younger, like, I used to get in a lot of trouble because they would think I would be in grown folks' business all the time, because I would just, like, be in the kitchen while they're talking about a divorce, and I'm just in the corner, like, eating some sandwich, being like, ooh.
You know what I mean?
Right. Or, like, they wouldn't let me. I remember they had to take my copy of What's Love Got to Do with It, because I would watch it over and over and over again. It was a rated R film, and I was, like, 7 years old, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I was just always fascinated in conversations that I wasn't allowed to be a part of, and something about me listening to those conversations allowed me to understand the essence of human beings in a way, at an age that I feel like I probably shouldn't have been listening. And so there's something about just listening that even when I'm writing, it's like I feel like I never really write a character, I just listen to them.
Wow.
And it's like, if I release myself and I release my ego and I release what I want the thing to be, then they just kind of speak.
You're like the vessel for it.
Right, absolutely. Right.
Wow. So then I'm curious too, as all of this is happening, did you come out when you were living in Texas?
Yes. So I never came out like to anybody besides my parents.
Okay.
And I came out to them. I have an older brother. He's 34, I believe.
Okay.
And I came out to my parents, and it wasn't the best response. And I realized as I got older how that's impacted me and how that's impacted like how I speak to other people when it comes to my emotions. Like, it's a lot easier to listen to characters talk about their emotions and write them rather than to speak about my own.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like there's a level of trauma that comes with, you know, it not being received well when you come out at a young age, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I feel like when you're a black family, you come out more than once, so I probably came out about a good 5 times.
repeat.
Came out about a good 5 times.
Well, because I just think the intersection of, like, blackness and queerness is interesting, for one, but then adding, like, you said, I didn't realize, I guess you grew up, like, in a Baptist household, like, a super Christian, and I just feel like that those three forces working together would be tricky to navigate.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. You know, I funny enough, Stevie, who's the director of NML,
yes,
Stevie,
shout out.
I remember I met him because I went to the New School, and he was in the grad program for directing, and I was in the undergrad program, and somehow we just like cross paths, and he directed a reading of Black Boy Fly, that play that I did in Texas.
Okay.
And that's how we became like really, really close.
Yeah.
And I just remember we were like becoming like brothers, and we went to the gym together, right? And we were like running on the treadmill, and we were just talking about queerness, and he was asking me, why don't you ever write a gay character? Why aren't any of your characters gay? And I was just like, I don't know why. I just don't want to. I don't know. And he was like, well, I'm sure when you do, it's going to be something special. And Peaches was my first queer character in one of my plays. And she, like, Peaches really just personifies like the blackest and gayest part of me put into a human form. And how even the blackest part and the queerest part is not accepted by the blackest people or the queerest people.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now so many questions are bubbling up. I'm gonna break them down. One, I was curious, have you done drag work before?
No, I never done drag before. No, wow. not before her.
So what was that experience like of dressing up in drag for the first time?
Woo! It was funny story. So my love affair with Peaches started from the writing aspect, and it was hard enough to write, but I never wanted to play her. Yeah, I never wanted to play her. What happened was there was an actor who I still love to this day, and I thought would be the perfect Peaches. And so from the moment I wrote her, I was like, this person. So we ended up doing with New York Theater Workshop, we went to Dartmouth and we did a reading performance of it.
Okay.
And we got that actor, and it just wasn't a click.
Yeah.
And so we ended up having to make a hard decision like the night before the performance, and I ended up having to go on as Peaches.
The next day. Whoa.
I ended up having to go on as Peaches, but I was so against it.
Huh.
But Stevie convinced me, as Stevie does.
Yeah.
And once I did it, it just felt so right. Something about it just was like, it was like putting on a glove. It was like,
yeah.
It was like Jalen Livingston. He's one of my friends, and he told me, he was like, you know, I feel like your ego didn't know you were writing that for yourself, but your spirit did.
He has such a way with words.
He does.
And that nails it on the head.
He does.
So, okay, and let me back up a little bit, because I did this with Marchant where I didn't explain Ain't No Mo. And I don't want to spoil anything because we're manifesting it coming back.
Yes.
But it's inspired by The Colored Museum by George C. Wolfe. And it's different vignettes. I'm like, am I about to explain your show while you're sitting here? I'm like, yeah, I guess I am. So for the listeners, so it's a series of vignettes as Black Americans are receiving one-way tickets to Africa. Mm-hmm. And Peaches is the like flight attendant clerk who checks everyone in for the flight, gate 1619. Barack Obama's the captain. Just to give some context. We'll dive in more. But so thinking of Peaches, even the first time I saw it, and I didn't know you, I didn't know anything about the show, like it did feel so right anyway. Like it just felt so honest and rooted in truth. And that easy monologue. And the Give Us Our Stuff Back, which I don't want to spoil that because that's like towards the end. But the easy monologue takes place about halfway through,
yeah.
I'd say. Mm-hmm. And it's about being Black and being queer, and it's really powerful. And I was curious what that writing process was like. Like, do you feel like you inserted a little bit of Jordan in there, or was it Peaches speaking through you?
It was Peaches writing, and then Jordan read it.
Yeah.
It was like when Peaches writing, and then I go back and I read it. I'm like, no, like this is the feeling of being stuck in between two places. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Being stuck between Blackness and queerness,
mm-hmm.
and being too much of other for either. You know what I mean? So it's, that's what that monologue is all about. It's like, how dare you tell me like it's not easy for you to do this when like I know it's not easy. My life has never been easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When I see easy, I'm gonna cross the street.
Yes.
I was like,
yes.
Ah, so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that one. I'm trying to remember it. I'm trying to. It's one of the monologues that would like get an ovation.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
I
when I didn't expect it, I'd be like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
It's hitting for me too.
And it was, I mean, you addressed like homophobia in the Black community with it. Like one of the other lines that stands out to me is when it was like, something about a group of Black men being mad at you because you look better than like the women they slept with the night before.
Right. And you remember all of this, don't you? Come on.
I'm like a fangirl. Yes. I'm like, I'm making t-shirts.
Yes. Let me see if I can find it. So this is the easy monologue. What? This ain't easy. Easy? What the hell is that? I ain't say it was easy. No, you ain't heard me say nothing about no easy. Easy don't know me and I don't know easy. Shit ain't easy. Nigga, what you doing now? Shit as hell ain't making shit easy for nobody. Easy. Bitch, you know how many more of these motherfuckers I still got to skin in after you. Do you know how hard these damn heels is raping and stabbing my damn feet? Do you know how much sweat this wig is keeping from gushing down the front of my damn face right now? Do you know how hard it was for me to get out of that bed this morning when the sun started yelling out my name? Easy. From the moment they plucked me off my mama's peach tree, I was ripe, round, and full of juice. And if Easy knew me, I wouldn't be wasting away in a world full of folks who hate peaches. I got my ass whooped last night by a group of jealous niggas who was pissed that I look better than the bitches they fucked the night before. That wasn't even white folks did that. They look like me. And every one of them is standing somewhere in this line waiting for me to scan their ticket to a better life. Seems like niggas will never accept any other nigga that don't fit into their tiny idea of what a nigga can be. Any kind of sparkle that sparkles too sweet they gotta spit on. Shoving out the shine and stomping out the sugar. But I realized a long time ago that sometimes black hate black more than any white ever could. And knowing that I'm going to a place where all I see is black scares the fuck out of me. So yeah, the shit ain't easy, but I sashayed my sexy ass onto work so I can get these coins and make this flight. You hear me? Talking about some easy.
Bravo. I'm literally near tears. I'm like, this is the dream right now. Bravo. That, I'm going to listen to that on repeat every day. Awesome. Y'all, listeners, I hope you realize what you just got because it was like a $100 ticket at the Publix. So y'all better be realizing how lucky you are to be getting it for free. Wow. It's so powerful.
Thank you.
It's so, and like, again, the essence, tapping in to this grounded, rooted truth is just so moving. It was a black ass show. Mm. From the first voiceover introduction that you did saying like, this is your black church and we're going to like praise and all of this stuff. And what I loved about that in particular was because there were so many like references, inside jokes, signifiers. I mean, I know I'm sure I didn't get all of them, but like that were specifically for like the black community. Period. That's the end of that sentence, I guess. But then it was also like, because of course there's just gonna be white audience members at the public theater,
right.
And I had white friends that went and still enjoyed it. But it was like, it was, this is specifically for, by, and about black people.
Yeah.
Was Peaches the first? What was the first thing you wrote for the show?
Oh,
do you remember?
That's a good question. Oh, the church scene. The church scene was the first thing I wrote.
Another classic.
Yeah.
So again, listeners, because I'm just like trying to make sure y'all understand, since I did not explain it for the Marshawn episode, the vignette. So it's the first one.
Yes.
That people get to experience.
Yeah.
And it's a funeral for Brother Right to Complain.
Yeah.
And I loved, it again, like making it just like a black work. You were like, welcome to the world. Mm-hmm. Either you're going to get it or you don't. What were the different audience reactions throughout the run?
There's some that were dead silent.
Were they mostly white?
Yes.
Okay.
There's the nights where it was mainly black people. It was a lot of foot stomping, mm-hmm. a lot of standing up in the chair,
a lot of
clapping and running around and talking. And then there were some people who were just so offended that they walked out from the first 5 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, there were a lot of times where that would happen. But it was so interesting to see, because this is what I wanted to do with the space, right? I feel like whenever you walk into a space in a theater, off-Broadway or Broadway, you can usually feel that it's a white space,
mm-hmm.
right? Usually from the way that the audience members treat you,
mm-hmm.
from the way that the people in the box office treat you,
mm-hmm.
From the way that the ushers treat you. You could usually just feel that this is not your space. And so what I wanted to do was to make sure that the person who would not feel welcome in any other play,
right,
to walk into a space and hear Back That Ass Up.
Yes.
You know what
and
I mean?
There's so many good songs playing during that opening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or during the pre-show.
Like,
yeah.
Knowing that this is what we're doing tonight. Okay.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you know, not everybody's going to get it. You know what I mean? And I always say, it's not it's I've been reading a lot about Toni Morrison and the white gaze and, mm-hmm. and just like how I usually when I sit down and write, I'm not thinking about white people. I'm just mm-hmm. not. I'm right. not. It's like if you wanna come, like listen, you're welcome. Like you are welcome. Let's have a good time. Make yourself a plate. Sit down and eat and have a good conversation. Yes. We might teach you to wobble. You know what I mean? You never know. But that yeah. doesn't mean you always get the invitation. Mm. But mm-hmm. you're welcome. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Totally.
You might not always get the invitation, but the door is open.
Yeah.
The door is open and you are welcome. Just like we might not always get the invitation, but the door is open.
Right. Right. Oh, that's real.
You know?
Well, that's so true. Because I feel like that was almost a burden. Like, I've talked to writers before. I'm like, do you think about how you might have a white audience? And they're like, no. The majority of them, I feel like, say no because it's like a disservice to them writing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, why do you have to explain all of these things instead of just like writing what you want?
It really is. And I think that that's what I've seen a lot lately is just like a lot of like explaining.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining blackness to yep. white people or explaining black death to white people. Ooh. I've seen wow. A lot of blood and gore and pain a lot in art recently, but it's not with any medicine. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of pain. And usually when you see a lot of pain in a work without any medicine or without any hope, that means it's for white people. Unintentionally a lot of times. That means it's for white people. Because we walk out in the streets and we see that pain. We feel that pain. We can leave your work and go out and get shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So why would we want to sit with you for 2 hours or so and just see a bunch of death
mm-hmm.
and gore with nothing to leave with?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like it's our responsibility as artists to yes, have those hard conversations and see those hard things, but always in some way or another, letting people know that there is a tomorrow.
Yeah.
That there's some sort of hope, whether that's with laughter, whether that's with mm-hmm. A yeah. certain character, a certain feeling, or a certain even like design, like something that lets us know like, yo, you're gonna be all right.
Yeah.
You're gonna be all right.
That's this is more just gushing on my end, but that's something else I like really resonated with me about Anomo was like, we laughed, we cried, we grieved, we healed. Mm. Like there was so much there. We felt like a multitude of emotions with that. So I love this idea of like having medicine and stuff injected into a play. And I mean, there's also like a complicitness at the end mm-hmm. with like the flag mm-hmm. drop and everything too, which again, I'm not spoiling because it will come back. We're manifesting that today.
Yes,
but it's, I mean, it was when I was after those first few times I saw it, the thing I would tell people was like, your writing, Stevie's direction, and that cast worked.
Cast.
I mean, rock stars. Yes. Like it all worked together so seamlessly. Like, and you don't get that all the time in theater. Mm. You just don't. And so I guess I was curious, like leading to what were those rehearsal processes like? What was it like? Like, were you in the corner like rewriting stuff, and then they were like rehearsing it?
Yeah, it was such. You know, it was such a haven. It was such
yeah.
a. It was such a safe space,
mm-hmm.
A lot of joy,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes a lot of tears,
mm-hmm.
A lot of blood in my case.
No.
No, really, because I would be rehearsing in six in stiletto heels.
Listen.
So that way when I got to the show heels, it wasn't that big of a, you know
oh,
what I mean?
Smart. Yeah,
so
smart.
It was about, but I had to fill out an injury report because I couldn't feel my toes for 3 weeks.
No.
And this fight with Miss Bag and mm-hmm. like how I would just up with like blood on my legs, and I'll be like, where is this coming from? Where is this coming from? No, but it was such a man, I wish everybody could experience that room. It was so peaceful and so joyful and such a safe space that Stevie made sure happened. Every day we ended the rehearsal with each cast member and crew member got to bring in a song that they felt like would go into Miss Bag.
Oh.
And then we would dance and work out to that song before we left rehearsal. Yeah, It was just a safe space. Stevie did therapy sessions with the characters. He would like with the Green family, set up a therapy session by the end of rehearsals. That lasted for about a good 2 hours, just venting a whole bunch of, you know, family mess.
Right.
It was just, and I loved bringing something new into the room, because I just loved these actors, these brilliant actors, and how they would just manifest these things that we were told were impossible, to be honest. I remember the first people who we submitted the show to, they were like, how is this a play?
They were like, how is this a play?
But then I think after that, that's when I think people start to realize, how is it not? You know what I mean? How is it not? And it was just a crazy world that I didn't see how it would be done. I actually didn't want to show it to anyone. Stevie was the one who made me like do a reading, because I just wrote it, and I was like meeting with him every week, and I would like write something new, and I just enjoyed being in his company and talking about work with him. And then he was just like, you need to share this.
What was the, I mean, I know it was inspired by Colored Museum, but what was like the initial catalyst for you writing?
Yeah, so it was basically, I was inspired by the deaths of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather than inspired, I was implicated. There was just something about all this death that just, it just made me heavy. Mm-hmm. Like, we're literally watching a man die on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
I went into a depression, and I always say I wish people, like, you could call in black whenever somebody dies.
Yes.
Hey, I'm calling in black. I don't have to tell you why. Just understand.
I just
found myself in a dark space. I remember walking from 14th Street to 165th, just walking and not really knowing, you know, what to do or what to think. And I'm the type of person who loves to laugh. I love to find things to laugh about and write things that make me laugh. And so, like, I'm the guy at the funeral who's, like, always talking about, like, why is this bitch wearing a bra? She going 6 feet under. Like, right. You know what I mean? I'm always that person. So, or, like, at my granddad's funeral, and we were there for, like, it felt like 4 hours. I was like, he's probably cursing all these people out. If they say one more Hail Mary, he is waking up and kicking all of us out, right? So I wanted to find something to laugh about. And so it just came this concept of, like, what if all black people just decided to pack up and go to Africa?
Because, like, shit is not going
Exactly. And so out of that came these characters. And I think the first thing that I wrote after the church scene was Peaches. Yeah, that's the first thing I wrote.
So were you, like, super familiar with Colored Museum? Like, what was your first experience with that?
I had never even really read Colored Museum all the way through.
Oh, okay.
What happened was, we were studying it in class, and we were watching bits and pieces of it and speaking about it. And I didn't, this is kind of bad, but I didn't get a chance to read it that week. But I was
professors
so,
don't listen.
Cause it was one of those, it's just one of those places that I've heard about from the time I was probably like a teenager, you know what I mean? So it's like, I've always admired the imagery of it. I've always admired, like, that first scene, where they were going to America from Africa, and Miss Pat and all that stuff. Like, I've always been inspired by that. And so I just wondered, like, I felt like we had changed so much as a people, and we had evolved so much. Like, communication is different, dance is different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I wanted to find out what it means to leave this country. What do we mean to pack up and go? Colored Museum really just gave me a green light for freedom, in a way. It gave me a green light to just, like, go all the way. Like, just have fun with it.
Did George C. Wolfe get to see the show?
No, he didn't.
Oh, my God. That means it's got to come back so he can see it at least.
No, he did not. I wish he could have.
But y'all had a lot. Like, one night, Angela Davis was there when I was there that night. Yes. Like y'all, Kiki Palmer.
Kiki Palmer, Angela Davis, Steven Spielberg, and Angela Bassett.
Oh yeah, yeah. Coleman Domingo.
Angela Bassett was funny because there's a reference to her in the play, and as soon as I said her name, like the crowd went crazy.
Yes.
The crowd went crazy. That was a fun night. Bradley Cooper came.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was just a great group of people who got a chance to see it. Queen Latifah.
Listen,
yeah,
y'all.
Yeah, it was a moment. It really was.
What was one of your favorite, like, I mean, and it doesn't have to be with like a celebrity, but what was one of your favorite, you know, post show fangirl coming up to you? I mean, you should probably say me, but if it wasn't me, I'm kidding. <Right? laughs> Who would it be?
There's two. I think I told you about this. Mm-hmm. One was this young girl who came with a school, mm-hmm. and she had such a big personality. Like you could tell that everybody, all her other little friends were like, okay, here she goes.
Right.
She's like, oh my God, it was this, it was that. And then she came up to talk to me, and I asked her, like, what'd you enjoy about the show? Like, what was your favorite part? And she got really, really quiet, like, to the point where I could see, like, for the others, that was something that was unusual.
Yeah.
And she started to talk about the prison scene and how the character Blue reminded her of her aunt, mm-hmm. and how she feels like it made her realize that when she's in prison, all the stuff that is taking away from her,
right?
And the healing that comes after that, and she just started to cry, and she was like, I get it now. And this girl was probably like 10 years old, you know what
wow.
I mean? And she was just like, I get it now. And she just cried and cried. And I just hugged her and like held her for like a good minute, and that would just made me so full. So she was one, and there was this guy, who was like, I believe he had just got out of prison like maybe like 2 months ago. Never seen a play before.
Wow.
Never seen a play in his life. And he came afterwards and he was like, yo, like I felt like that was for me. He was like, all wow. of it was for me. He was like, I wanna go back to my niggas in the hood and be like, yo, like y'all gotta come see this play. Y'all gotta,
yes,
you know what I mean?
I love that.
And it's like there was just something about that just made me so full, because it's like, that's who the work is for. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? That's who the work is for.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's for the people who, like I said, aren't always allowed into the space. You
right.
know what I mean? Or always right. aren't always comfortable in the space.
Right. That's so real. And like, because I feel like people are always like, oh, Black people can't afford to come to theater. And it's like, no, they're just not interested in what's being presented.
They can afford to buy them Jordans and go to that Beyonce
right,
concert.
Right, exactly.
They can afford it. I'm telling you, Black America has so much money. If mm-hmm. you put it all together, we can afford to run our own country. Like, really.
Right.
Like, it's just about what's being presented. And I've had so many people come up to me. To me, it was a diverse audience. But to me, it was still lacking. Mm-hmm. But to a lot of the white people who come up to me, like producers and theater makers, they're like, how did you get such a diverse audience? How did you get so many Black and Hispanic people
right.
into your play? But for me, I'm like not satisfied. But for them, it's like, oh,
mind blowing. God,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's the work. Mm-hmm. It's the work. It's like, what are you saying? What mm-hmm. are you giving them? You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, that's what that was about.
Dang. No, it was, I mean, it was so special, and I'm so happy, like, so many people did get to see it. I personally need more people to see it.
Yes.
Because it was just so special. It's incredible, and maybe one day I will, like, actually articulate all my thoughts, like, write them down so I can actually share them with you instead of gushing
yes.
and babbling.
I would love that. I love
yeah, maybe
that.
I will. But so you also, like, you not only share your gifts and your voice at the theater, but you do TV writing.
Yes.
So I wanted
yes.
to hear a little bit about, like, you know, either stuff you're working on now or what that experience has been like for you.
Yes. It's been such an experience. At first, I was writing on Lee Daniels' show Star, their final season.
Right, right.
And that was an experience. That was like so much talent, like Queen Latifah, Brandy, and Miss Lawrence, and
A-list.
Yeah, it was great. But I think I realized I wasn't for network television.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't for network television. I'm much more of, I'm less of a stay in your lane kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a let's do this, let's do that, let's do this, let's do that. You know what I mean? Let's tell this story this week. Let's do, you know what I mean? And they're more of like make it fit within the box.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it would be like just things that like would happen and you'd be like, you know, you get notes from like a network and you'd be like, you know, the audience is not that dumb. Like the audience really is not that dumb. Like they think the audience is like dumb.
Interesting.
It's like, or maybe it's just, but, but yeah, there's just, it's an interesting medium that I feel like hasn't been cracked to its widest potential just yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people who are in charge about what's on television mm-hmm. and critique it
mm-hmm.
before you see it, are not artists. They're business people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're business people.
Right.
And I feel like if there was a network or if there was a channel where just artists got to be in charge of what was seen by the rest of the world, I think it would be an explosive. It would be an explosive thing.
Cool.
But yeah, it was like it was a great experience. Like I learned so much.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do some really cool things and I worked with some really great people. Like the writers, the rest of the writers were like, mwah. I just love them. But then I got to do my own thing with the Miss Pat Show, which is what we shot a pilot of this past summer, which was directed by Debbie Allen, which is so cool.
Amazing.
Right? And basically that show is based off of the life of comedian Miss Pat. She's a real person. She wrote a book about her life called Rabbit, which she lived an incredible story. Like she had two kids by the time she was 14, sold drugs, went to prison, been shot twice, and now she's a full-time mom stand-up comedian. And basically they came to me with her book, and I came up with a concept for a television show for her. And for me, so I was a kid, I was raised on I Love Lucy and The Golden Girls and Good Times and All in the Family. I was raised on all those shows, so I've always had a deep, like literally for Christmas, that's all my parents would buy me were box sets of these television shows. So I studied them from the time I was a kid, and I just felt like she was the key to kind of creating a new version of the sitcom, where like you get to talk about topics that you don't normally get to talk about, and we get to, for instance, for Hulu, we get to curse, we get to say whatever we want to say, and it's like all in front of a live studio audience, and so it's basically like I just tricked them into doing theater for television. That's basically what it is. I tell them, like, I'm like, look, guys, I'm just putting up a play every week. That's what it is to me. You know what I mean? It's like you get to say something new every week in front of an audience and kind of make the audience at home feel like they're a part of that live studio audience rather than the just, because I feel like a lot of time, like sitcoms now are just like jokey joke, haha, you know what I mean? With fake laugh tracks and you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I wanted to make sure like I was clear from jump about what I wanted it to be. And we were able to do that. And so I'm so excited. And I hope they pick it up so you guys are able to see it, because I'm so proud of it.
Yes.
And like we get to have so much fun. So much fun.
You're killing it. You're thriving. Look, I'm always rooting you on. It's so exciting.
Thank you.
So the final two questions are off of the podcast, because we all know like we could talk for hours, but you've got a life, you got things to do. Go run New York City. And I feel like these will be easy questions for you. So number one, if you could recommend a piece of Black art for our listeners to take in, like a book, a musical album, a film, etc., what would it be?
I think I'm still ruminating on A Strange Loop.
Michael
Jackson's A Strange Loop. That cast album is... Ugh.
Yeah.
It's so good. So I'm still ruminating on that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see what else. Have you ever seen I Like It Like That?
Mm-mm.
So there's this movie called I Like It Like That that was released in like 94, 95. And it was directed by Darnell Martin, Darnell L. Martin, who's a Black Puerto Rican woman, and she became the first woman of color to ever have a film like financed by a major film studio with that film.
Oh wow!
And that film is like, if you love New York, and you love, like, that's a beautiful film. Just like Rita Moreno's in it.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film that I'm still has. It's one of the few films of that era of any era really that I've seen today, and that feels like it was ahead of its time. It might still be ahead of our time.
Wow.
Just even in the inclusion of queerness and blackness and and Latinx people, it's just such a beautiful love story.
Okay.
It's such a beautiful love story. So I would say check that out if you can get your hands on it.
Yeah, I'm with that. And I have to watch House Party too.
Yes, House Party. I was trying to get her to do the Kid and Play earlier. She was like, it's called the Kid and Play? What is that from? I was like, no, that was their names at House Party. And so if y'all don't know House Party, you have to watch House Party. It was a classic film.
No, I feel like I'm just out of the loop on that. Like, The Move, but I was like, I did not know it was that title, which feels significant to the situation.
Yes, right? Ain't no hurt nobody.
And then the second question is, if you give a shout out to a fellow black artist, who would it be? And I know you, like, know everyone, and you got a lot of love to give, but this is just to elevate. This is not, like, exclusionary.
Yes. There's
or if you
so
want to do
top many.
Three, I don't know.
Yeah, there's so many. Danye.
Yes.
I'm really proud of what Jeremy's doing as far as like inclusion in the theater and trying to get people who can't afford the theater to come to the theater.
Yeah.
He's kind of pioneering that, which is really great. Erica Dickinson. Who else? Loy A. Webb, who did the light last season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody got to see The Light, but it was my favorite play last season.
Wow.
It was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. I felt checked after leaving that play. I was like, I was seeing that play, and I was like there was moments where I would be like, yeah, 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 and I'd be like, oh, let me reassess my life.
Right. I love
that
it.
Play is so good. There's so many. Jackie Sibbles Dre.
Mm-hmm.
I said Danye. Who else? There's just a Dominique.
Yes.
Katori.
Yes.
Larry Powell. There's so
I
many.
Know.
It's like I can't. Right? It's not. It's so many beautiful people who are doing beautiful work that I'm so proud of, and I'm so glad. You know, when you just like, you're proud to be a part of the conversation that includes your peers. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Sometimes I just see work and I'm like, I'm so glad that I get to be here while you're here. You
yeah,
I mean?
Making
just
art.
Just like I'm glad I get to be here while you're here.
Hey, obviously the feeling is very mutual. I'm just so grateful. Like, I love seeing you at the Signature working and just like, I just feel like you're such a good example for everyone. I'm like, just doing what you love, doing the damn thing.
It's a blessing. You know? Really, really is to just like pack up and just like, I have to go to the Signature to write. I was telling you, I wrote Ain't No More at the Signature in the lobby. Yeah.
Yes.
It's just a place for me to go. And like, there's something about writing theater surrounded by theater that just feels so special to me.
Totally.
I have to go there. If I write in my house, it ain't happening.
That's fair. You get distracted.
And
no?
I really do. Like, I start to turn on the TV. I watch The View. I watch Wendy Williams. I'm just
gotta get a snack.
Right.
Like, okay. Yeah.
Right. Good morning, America. Gotta get a snack. Gotta go to the gym. Gotta use the bathroom. Pretend like I'm constipated so I can sit on the toilet for 2 hours scrolling on my phone.
Yeah. I get it. This is relatable content.
Yes, but some people can like sit at home and you know they get it done. Not I, said the cat.
No,
yes,
So, if people want to follow you on social media and follow this beautiful journey of yours, where can they find you?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Jordan E. Cooper. All one word. Or you can find me on Facebook, Jordan E. Cooper, or on Twitter, Jordan E. Cooper _. My Twitter sucks. I never tweet, but you know.
Look, Instagram's where it's at.
Right. Instagram is where it's at. That's where the let out is.
Y'all, we just got to talk to Jordan E. Cooper. Did I even see your accolades? I didn't see your accolades. Out 100, Adelco, Obie winner, Drama League. Like he is doing the damn thing. And you just got to listen to him talk. You got to hear his brilliance. I got to experience it. real life. We're so lucky.
Oh, thank you.
But no, thank you so much for being here today.
No, thank you for having me.
This was such a delight.
It really was.
Just because, like, thinking back to seeing that show, I was like, one day I gotta talk to him. And y'all, dreams do come true. And the next dream is like getting Ain't No Mo back so you guys can all see it.
Yes.
And revel in that
work. We're gonna make that happen. Yes. They're working on it.
Yes. Until next time, y'all.